the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
How about that? Right on time once again. Johnny Dean here with you and Professor Plum. It's time to get going. Another edition of the Bucket Strategy Investing Program. Money issues discussed and solved right here. I am joined again today by the Professor Rick Plum, Certified Financial Planner and our Chief Brain Trust Advisor from Lucia Capital Group. We're starting the hour off with a discussion that's near and dear to just about everybody who watches this program and or listens to it. Required minimum distributions from your retirement plans. Why? Why do you suppose it's something that people need to know about? Well, if you're approaching age 70 and a half, and you know what? Technically, we all are, then you need to hear what you're about to hear, right? In fact, I'd say even if you're still 10 or 15 years away from the age of 70 and a half, you should still start thinking about these required minimum distributions right now in order to avoid what could potentially be a big tax problem later on. Could be. It's all part of planning. We don't want you to be surprised by the time you hit age 70 and a half. So we're going to tell you all about that coming up here in just a moment. Wealth education, the best strategy advice that you'll find anywhere. It's all just ahead. And right now is your chance to call us with your money questions. Participation is required. Get to your phone. Call this number, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. You can also email us here in the studio. WealthEd.com is our website. Just look for the Find Your Answer link right there on the upper part of the page. Send us your question, and we will answer it right here on the program. Simple enough. Professor Rick Plum, here again, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Rick's a CFP, that's Certified Financial Planner, and our Chief Brain Trust Strategist. Remember this, you need to take advantage of the experience and the knowledge of the Brain Trust. These are the advisors who can look over your individual goals and help you design a plan that can work for you. You call them at Lucia Capital Group. Their phone number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. You get a buckets plan. You get one that's tailored to meet your specific needs. No generic advice here. Again, the number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. We do thank them for bringing us this hour of the program. Our number here in the studio, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Whatever money issue is on your mind, you give us a call. You ask, we answer. You comment, we comment. It works very simply like that. Bucket Strategy Investing, 877-PLANNER. Okay, so required minimum distributions. Here's the key word there, required, Professor Plum. We should point out.
You picked up on that.
Yeah. Oddly enough, well, and that's what makes the whole thing so sticky. Now, we should say right off the bat, for those that aren't aware, and most of you are, but some are not, that there is, at a certain age, a requirement to remove money from your tax-deferred retirement accounts.
Right, your IRA, 401k, 403b, 457, something that they gave you a tax, potentially gave you a tax deduction for up front. They only give you the benefit for so long. They've let you have tax-free growth, I should say tax-deferred growth, for however long you've had the money in there. But at some point in the future, no good deed goes unpunished. It is time to start paying back some of that benefit that you were so graciously given by the government up front. So it's time to start giving back. Now, the government has set the rules that says that for an IRA, if you are at least 70, it is a individual retirement account. They want to see you use it for retirement. So they've basically said that at age 70, if you're not retired, you need to start taking it out anyway. But you should be retired by 70, so you're going to need to start taking some money out of this at retirement, which for them means no later than age 70 and a half. Now, it is not the day you turn 70 and a half. It's the year. So any distribution during the year that you turn 70 and a half qualifies as a required minimum distribution.
It counts toward it.
Yeah, it would be pretty tough for somebody like me, who's, my birthday is at the end of June. And so I won't turn 70 and a half until almost the very last day of December for that year. So that means that if only distributions from the day that I turned 70 and a half worked, I got about 2 or 3 days at the end of a year where everybody's taking time off to make a distribution to set. No, it doesn't work that way. It's the year. So the year that I turn 70 and a half, I will have to take a required minimum distribution from my IRAs. And if I'm not working, from my 401ks and other different tax-deferred retirement accounts. And even a distribution on January 2nd, as I mentioned, I turn 70, or I will turn 70 in the year that I, in June. And if I take a distribution in January, I'm still in that year 69, but I'll turn 70 and a half, 11 and a half months later. Still qualifies because it came out in the tax year that I turned 70 and a half.
What they look at is once the year is over and your tax returns have been filed, they're looking and they're going to say, okay, how old was this person at the end of the year?
And they know.
And they're 70 and a half.
George Orwell has told them just how old you are.
Somehow, when you give them your birth date, they know how old you are. And then they look and they say, okay, 70 and a half. We've got some IRAs? Yes. Has any money come out of it? Yes. How much? Okay. We've satisfied the required minimum distribution.
And you may be saying, well, how do they know? There's a form that you may or may not pay attention to. You get it, every year. Usually after you file your return, and a lot of people will go, oh no, I got this form, what do I do with it? And it's an informational only form. It says 5498 on it, and it basically it's there to tell the IRS how much money you have in tax deferred accounts, how much money was contributed or pushed into the account, how much money was pushed out of the account. So they do keep track, and they do know how old you are. So they know how much money went in, went out of that IRA or all of your IRAs, 401ks, things of that nature, from these forms that are filed. Now, that form is specifically filed for the IRS's information, but because your IRA custodian is sending your personal information to the IRS, they also send you a copy of it. So do you need to do anything with your 5498 form that you'll get later this year? Yeah, just check to make sure it looks reasonable. I mean, other than that, that's all it's for.
Okay, so now we know who.
That's for the owners of things.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Now, there is somebody out there saying, but you don't have to take the first one when you're 70 and a half.
All right, yes.
Yeah, I know. The very first required minimum distribution. Why they put this in, probably because, just to give you a little bit of a mulligan, so you can say, oh, I didn't realize that. And the penalty is quite severe for missing it. So if you miss your very first required minimum distribution, in the very first year, and only the very first year, you can take it out the next tax year. As long as you do it within the first quarter of the next year, up until April 1st, not April 15th, April 1st of the next following
tax year.
Yeah,
so they won't even really know until you're about age 72 that you missed your first one, if you do indeed miss your first one.
And for a long time, there was about a 10-year stretch that they really weren't checking on this stuff at all. And they were called out on it about 3 years ago. There was an audit done that basically said, hey, IRS, you haven't been doing your job following up on this stuff. So my hope or guess is that when they were called to the carpet on the fact that they weren't really paying attention to it and people were missing their RMDs and not getting penalized, that when Congress and the Congressional Budget Office did the audit and said, you guys need to keep track of this, they probably put some things in place to catch RMDs more likely, because there was about a 10-year period of time where people just weren't being caught.
Okay, so as I said, we know who. It's anybody who has a tax-deferred retirement account. We know when, because that's age 70 and a half, for the most part. The question becomes...
Or older.
Older, yes. From then on out. How much to take out?
Well, it's actually a fairly easy calculation. And a lot of people say, you use the balance as of December 31st. And people, well, how do I know what my balance is going to be at the end of the year? They don't use the end of this year. They use the end of last year. For the 2016 required minimum distribution, we look backwards. We look to the value of the accounts as of 12/31 last year. And then we look at how old will we become this year. And we use the age, the factor for our life expectancy factor that the IRS has graciously given us, a life expectancy factor for the age that we will reach. So even if my birthday is December 31st and I turn 71 by December 31st, I use 71 for my age factor, for the factor that I'm going to be looking up. It's the age that you will reach during this tax year. It doesn't matter whether you reached it on January 1st or on December 31st. It's the age that you reach during this year. And you look up the corresponding factor for that. As I mentioned, the IRS has given us a table. And they've gone through several different tables, and now they've kind of mashed a couple tables together. For most people, we all use the same table. And it doesn't matter whether we have named a grandchild as our beneficiary, whether we have our spouse as a beneficiary, whether we don't even have a beneficiary, which you should have. We almost everybody who has an IRA who is in required minimum distribution age will use the same table. Now, the life expectancy does change from year to year. Obviously, as you get older, your life expectancy gets a little shorter. But you do look it up for your year. But almost everybody uses the same table now, with one category of exceptions. If you are married to somebody who is more than 10 years younger than you, then you use a different table. It is a joint account in many respects between you and your spouse. It is your account, or it is his or her account. But from a life expectancy standpoint, when they are allowing you to use a joint table. And if you've got, and everybody uses a table that basically was set up on a 10-year spread, it's only if you have somebody that's a joint life covered on this, a spouse, that is more than 10 years younger, that you get to use a different table.
Yeah, the table for that one is less of a required minimum distribution.
Smaller.
It's smaller because they're figuring...
The younger person's going to live longer.
The IRA's got to last longer, and that's why they do it that way. Okay, now, what about inherited IRAs? Got a lot of stuff to talk about on this, but you know, your phone calls come first, so if you have any questions on this or anything else, lines are open. Give us a call, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Money questions answered right here when we come back. Market Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking your phone calls. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. A lot of stuff to get to. We'll get to some more of your emails. If you have emailed us over the last couple of days, we will cover all of them at some point, I would hope, before the end of the week. So we'll find out. I don't know. Not a ton of time left, though. All right, let's get back to the phones. Just one line open right now at 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Professor Plum, moving along to Honolulu, Hawaii. Ruth is up next. Hello, Ruth.
Hi, Professor Plum.
Yes.
I have IRA rollover question. Mm-hmm. I have two accounts sitting at the same institution. If I need two different maturity dates, if I want to roll it over to a different institution within the same year, can I do that?
It's easier if you have it sent directly from each IRA to the new IRA, rather than having them send you a check, depositing the check and then writing a check to the new institution. Just have them send the money directly from IRA 1 to IRA 2. That's a transfer, and that you can do that every day. There's no limit on the number of transfers that you can enact. There is a limit on the number of rollovers. A rollover is where they send you the money, you take possession of the money for up to 60 days, and then redeposit the same amount or some amount of that initial distribution back into an IRA to avoid the taxes. So just have them send it directly to the new custodian.
So that means if taking out a check, if I make the deposit, cannot take two times.
Right, it's one time in 60 days, and then it's only one 60-day rollover in a 12-month period. So let's say you have an account coming due in February, and it's $10,000, and you have them send you a check for $10,000, and then you go to some other IRA custodian and deposit the $10,000 within a couple of days, couple of weeks, so you're well within the 60 days. But then the next one comes due in March. Well, if you take another check distribution of that one, you are not allowed to roll that one over anymore, and that has to stay out of the IRA world. So it's much better in your case to do what's known as a trustee to trustee transfer. Tell your current IRA custodian to send the money directly to the new IRA custodian. They'll either, the new one will probably have paperwork you can fill out and have it done. There'll be some paperwork, but when you open the account at the new place, say you want to do a transfer of the old one and tell them when you want it to happen, and they'll take care of it for you.
Oh, all right. Thank you so much. I enjoy your show.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, transfers you can do all day long.
Yeah, transfers are not a problem.
There's no limit.
No, but when we talk about doing the
rollover.
And it's now once a year, as we said.
And it's not per
every
account.
Every 12 months, yeah.
Where it used to be, if I had an account with XYZ bank, and I could do a rollover from that and put it either back into that bank or another bank. And then I had an account with ABC Brokerage, I could then do another rollover from that one to a different, as long as I didn't use the same institution in the first rollover.
Right.
And I could do that as many times with different accounts as I wanted to. Now they've said you have an IRA, not accounts. You have a total value of IRA. And any one rollover, that's where you take possession of the money and have the 60 days, up to 60 days, to put it into a new IRA. One time in a rolling 12-month period of time.
Yeah, and it's been
can't do it in December and then again in January with two different tax years.
Right.
It's a once in a 12-month rolling period of time. And the curious issue is, and I understood where they're coming from for that one, but they're now linking in Roth IRAs and traditional IRAs, and they're looking at both of them. So if I do a rollover from an IRA and put it back into another IRA, I can't then do one from a Roth IRA and put it into another Roth IRA.
Is that new?
That's new with this new clarification.
Conversions, I didn't know that.
Conversions are not an issue. If you're going to take the money out and you screw up and you're doing a second rollover within 12 months and you realize you're not allowed to put it back into a traditional IRA,
you can
put it into a Roth IRA, because a rollover into a Roth IRA conversion doesn't count as the once in a 12-month period of time.
Okay.
You're going to pay tax on it,
right,
but at least you get it back into something that can have, maybe give you some tax advantage down the line.
Well, when did that come down the line?
When they clarified this back in 2014.
Well, where was I? Okay, well, that's good to know. Okay, that's interesting stuff. Wow. I really did go back to school today, didn't I? It's good stuff. Wow. All
what
right.
Am I, Rodney Dangerfield?
I guess. I don't know. What's a widget? Anyway, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Let's see. Washington State, Gene is up next. Hello, Gene.
Hey there. How are you?
Doing great. How can we help you today?
Well, I just had a question. I received an email that said that there is going to be a change to Social Security benefits starting May 1st of this year, and I was wondering if you guys knew what that was.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, my situation is I am 56, and I'm currently working in a city job, so I will get a retirement from that. But my wife is not working, and she is 62, and so she is eligible to draw her Social Security benefits, and she does have her 40 quarters.
Okay.
And so my understanding is that if I'm drawing a state retirement or city retirement, that my spouse or whatever would get a reduced benefit because of that. And
no,
so,
not necessarily. Your spouse will get her benefit based on her work record. Your spouse that does not have a pension, she's going to get everything she was entitled to from her own work record. It's you that are going to have an issue with your benefits. Now, did you ever work in the Social Security area where you paid FICA taxes?
Yes, I did.
So do you have your 40 credits?
Yes, I do.
So your benefit will be reduced. Your benefit, when you ultimately apply for it, if you're also receiving a city pension where you did not pay into Social Security, or a government pension where you did not pay into Social Security, your Social Security benefit will be reduced. Either your own benefit from your own work record, or potentially a spousal benefit from your wife's work record. Now, as far as this May 1st, 2016 rule, you said you were 56, did I hear, or did I miss that?
Nope, you're correct. That is correct.
And she is 62. So this new rule, even though it does affect anybody who is not 66 by the end of April this year, actually has no impact on you, because it's a strategy that you would not have employed in the first place. They're taking away the ability for one spouse, typically the older one, not always, but for one spouse to apply for a benefit and suspend it at full retirement age, and allow somebody else to continue to draw benefit from their work record. It was very popular with people that were only a couple years apart or the similar age, where, like in my case, let's say I wanted to wait until age 70 to take my benefit, but I wanted my wife to get a spousal benefit. So at 66, if I were that age now, I could apply for my benefit and suspend it and not take it. But even though I had suspended it and wasn't receiving it, my wife could get a benefit from me. What they've done is say, if you cannot suspend it by the end of April, if you suspend it after April, May 1st or later, if I suspend my benefit, everybody else that's pulling from my work record is suspended as well. Now, because of the 6-year difference in age, you would never have used
this
option.
Wouldn't have happened anyway.
So it's not an issue for you. So you don't have to worry about them taking away anything that you would have been able to do before. All the rules that were in effect before are going to affect you now. You are going to be subject to the windfall elimination provision. That affects your Social Security benefit that you earned. You're going to be affected by the government pension offset. That affects a spousal or ultimately a widow's benefit that you may be eligible for from your wife's work record. That has nothing to do with the new rules. That's always been in place. Now we just need to make sure you understand what you're up against.
Yeah, Gene, if you need some more clarification on that, I know it's a lot of information. I got to take a break, but hold on. We'll be happy to talk to you when we come back more about this, because it's important stuff.
877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're answering your calls, taking your phone calls. We're going to get back to Gene in just a moment. We've got a few others on hold. We'll get to everybody's call this segment and next. We do have a lot of Social Security questions, and we're going to get back to Gene's in just a second. But in the spirit of that, I want to remind folks that every Tuesday, there is a Social Security show. We devote an entire program just to Social Security. Now, it's only a half hour, but we get as much information in there as we can. And it's only available at wealthed.com, our website. It's Tuesdays, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern time. And we do have a lot of questions that we get on that program. You can call and ask a question either live or just leave it on our answering machine there. You can send us an email via wealthed.com. The Social Security hotline, if you want to just write it down, 800-838-0483. Again, that's just a recorded line where you can leave us your question and we'll answer it on the Social Security show. So that's every Tuesday, all right? Coming up Tuesdays, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern time. It's only at wealthed.com. Professor Plum and I taking your calls. All right, let's get back to the phones. Gene, I know you had to either need some clarification, so we'll bring you back, or you had a couple more questions. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. So currently my wife is qualified, I guess, to receive about an $800 per month benefit. We have a business that we could continue to donate money or whatever, pay into Social Security for a few more years and then take it at 65. Just wondering if that would be the best way to go or if it would be in our best interest maybe to take that benefit now and, you know, if the offset makes sense.
Well, a lot of it has to do with, do you want to keep working? I mean, if the only reason you're going to keep working is to continue to pay into Social Security and get a bigger benefit, I'm not sure that's a big enough reason to continue to work. If you want to keep working, fine. And then that will, a byproduct of working, not only will be the current income, but your Social Security or your wife's Social Security benefit will be a little bit larger later on as well. And so I would look at more of, do we need the money? Do we need to keep working? And those kind of issues rather than, do I want to get a bigger benefit? So the other side of it is whether she takes her benefit now, I'm presuming she's 62 now, or waits until 66, which is her full retirement age, has a lot to do with how long she might live. Now, what is your benefit projected to be at 66 or full retirement age?
I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but I don't think it's going to be very large because it was 25 years ago when I stopped working and paying into Social Security.
Okay, that's fine. And so it's going to be a smaller benefit than hers. If you think she's going to live a long time, well into her 80s and longer, then I would consider waiting. Until she's 66 or so, maybe even 70, to take it, just because the numbers work out in her favor. If she has a normal life expectancy, early to mid-80s, I'd take it as soon as she quits working. So that's more of a deciding factor than the other thing. The continuation of the job is more of, do we have the ability to retire and have her, can we afford to have her quit now? Then that's a bigger issue than anything else. So if you have enough money and enough income sources, whether it be Social Security, pensions, other areas, that you can retire today, she can retire today, and you don't need to continue to work, well, then you're fine. But if we're tight on money, we're thinking that we want to pad ourselves a little bit, then continuing to work will be a better deal. And that has nothing to do, the Social Security is a byproduct of the continuation of work, not the purpose for the continuation of work.
Right, and I will be working for, you know, probably at least 4 more years. So we'll be fine financially until that point, and so we could continue to pay into Social Security for her for another 4 years, and then when we both retire, maybe it would make sense for us to draw it at that point.
Yeah, you can let, now remember your benefit, whatever it is going to be reduced because of your pension. Hers is not impacted by it. Yours is.
Okay, so it's okay to maybe try to boost hers for the next few years if we can.
I think the better boost is going to be her income that she's taking and the ability to continue saving into Roth IRAs, continue saving into investments that build up assets more so than paying more in Social Security taxes. Now, like I said, though, the more income she makes, the better it is for you guys now, and it accidentally helps out the Social Security.
Yeah, it's just kind of a byproduct.
But the reason to work is for the income and the ability to save, not the Social Security.
That's
an added bonus.
Or the enjoyment of work, too.
That's
the other thing, right, but not necessarily. Hey, Gene, I got to take some more calls, so if you have any more questions, hold on. We can talk to you off the air about them. You asked some very good questions. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Had a similar question that Gene was asking before the break from Linda in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Linda. How can we help you today?
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you, both of you, for everything that you do.
Thank you. Sure, yes. How can we help
you? Well, now I'm re-confused about the Social Security.
Oh, great. Issue. We've done it again, Professor Plum. We've confused more people.
I thought I had it, and I just don't seem to. Okay, here's the situation. I will be 66 in June, and I plan on taking my Social Security at that time. My husband is about a year and a half younger than I, and he was planning on taking a spousal from me when he turned 66.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know if that possible. I heard you say if the person taking the spousal, if their benefit is greater, then they can't take it. They'd have to take theirs. And the other thing I'm confused about is, would I have to apply for my Social Security before May the 1st if he wants to take a spousal, if he's eligible to do that when he turns 66?
Well, let me unconfuse things real quickly. But first thing I want to tell you is the plan that you laid out to begin with. You start your benefit at 66 in June and receive it, continue to receive it. Your husband waits until 66 and takes a part of your benefit, half of it, and waits until age 70 to take his, that is all good to go. There are no changes on that plan. You are right on the money, and I'm assuming his may be the larger benefit, and you think that at least one of you will live into your mid to late 80s. That is a great strategy. None of this other stuff matters because it didn't affect your ability to do exactly what you're planning on doing. You are not trying to do a file and suspend application. That's the one that screwed up by the May 1st deadline. You would not be able to do that. So if you had said, I want to file for my benefit in June and suspend my benefit, not receive it, allowing it to grow until age 70, but I still want my husband to get a benefit from my work record, that's a problem. You can't do that because you would have had to have done that before end of April, and you're not allowed to do that before end of April because you're not old enough. You weren't planning on doing that anyway. Not an issue. On the other side, your husband, he wants the ability to choose, once he gets to full retirement age, to take only the spousal benefit without applying for his own, thereby letting his own grow until age 70. As long as he was at least 62 by the end of last year, he still has that option. So he can do exactly what he wanted to do. You can do exactly what you told me you were going to do. You start to receive your benefit at 66. No problem there. You don't have to apply early. You're not even, I mean, you can apply now if you want to, but as long as you're not working. But everything that you wanted to do is still eligible to be done because your husband is at least 62 to do. The only strategy in here that has any time commitment, he made the cutoff. He's old enough.
Okay, now I'm clear.
You're good to go, Linda.
Yeah.
Unless they come back and screw it up again, I think I'm set.
Well, I think you're set.
They're not going to come back and screw it up that quick for the people they've already grandfathered in.
No, they're not going to do that. You were fortunately, you had to have been age 62 by the time January 1st hit of this year.
Right, and he was.
And you are. So that's where you would have had some issues with what you want to do, but you don't.
But everything is fine. The way you laid it out is perfect. You can still do it. You're good to go.
Okay, guys, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Linda. Thank you for the call. You see, and we knew this, when they changed the rules on this, because it used to be so simple, well, simple, relatively simple.
Yeah, there was only 10,000 strategies.
No, but there was a straightforward strategy for doing what Linda wants to do. Now, some people can still do it. Linda's one of them, but there are a whole bunch of other people who cannot do it.
Well, Linda's husband can do what he wanted to do. Linda can do what she wanted to do because she wasn't doing anything fancy.
Well,
she's just going to apply
She's going to take her benefit at age 66.
If Linda had wanted to be fancy and suspend her benefit, she missed it by 2 months. But she didn't want to do that, so she's okay.
Unless she was born May 1st, and then she only missed it by June 1st. She was born in June, right?
She was born in June.
Yeah, so it was June 1st. So anyway, all right. 877-PLANNER. I hope that cleared it up. It cleared it up for Linda, but there may be other folks out there who are equally confused on what these dates mean and all that stuff. Age 62. Anyway, if you have questions on that, go ahead and give us a call. We got some lines open right now. Got a couple emails. I do want to get to those as well. Trivia, all that. We're going to try to cram that into the next segment. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean and Professor Rick Plum. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, more cowbell, less cowbell, I don't care, it doesn't matter. Just give us a call, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. We've got some lines open right now for you. And by the way, I want to remind you once again, because we are here, in the actual spring, I suppose, season here, about the workshops that we got coming up. There are several in different cities around the country. And if you're watching or listening and wondering, gee, I would love to meet Professor Plum and Terry Keyes and all the local advisors, and I would sure love to have my questions answered, but I don't know how to do that in person. Well, here's what you do. You go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Check the list of places that they're going to be, the live events, and you'll find your city or perhaps a city near you, and you can sign up right there. Of course, I should remind you that they're all free. They're all free. You don't want to miss any of these workshops. Professor Plum, I know you take questions after the show, and it is a show, kind of.
a presentation, a production.
It's a presentation. That's what it is, exactly. You talk about bucket strategy. You talk about retirement income challenges and strategies to help overcome those challenges. And by the way, whatever question they happen to have afterwards, whether it's on buckets or retirement or whatever money question, they can answer it then.
Well, we do prefer retirement and financial-related questions.
Well,
but,
you
can try with other questions.
What's the capital of, Delaware or whatever? I don't know.
I'm sorry, I don't know that one.
I hope it's Dover. Because I just said it. All right. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Got a little bit of room on the phones. Now, we didn't get a chance to really finish talking earlier this hour about some of these required minimum distributions. I want to take a moment or two now, and perhaps in another hour, because we won't have time to nearly get through all of these. The questions we've had on beneficiaries. Speaking specifically of a beneficiary of an IRA, it could be a Roth IRA, it could be a traditional IRA, but you have somebody who say they die at age 69, and let's say it was this year.
Well, it's one of the bigger questions we get when somebody passes away. How, Uncle John, so-and-so, whoever it is, passed away this month or passed away last month, passed away in January. They're not 70 and a half yet, do they? What do we do about the IRA? Is there a required minimum distribution? Or they pass away this year, but they haven't taken their RMD yet this year. How do you go about dealing with the situation where somebody passes away early in the year or before they actually take their required minimum distribution? And also, do they even have a required minimum distribution? Earlier in the show, we were talking about, me and the fact that I don't, in the year that I get to that age, I won't turn 70 and a half until December, late December. So what happens if I pass away and earlier in that year, January, February, the year I turned 70 and a half. I'm not 70 and a half when I die. I don't have to do anything anymore, but do my heirs have to take a required minimum distribution? Or do I have to even worry about it? Do they have to worry about it? And the answer is, once I get to January 1st, if I am going to be required minimum distribution age at any time during that year, I have a required minimum distribution. Even if I don't live long enough to take it, those accounts assuming I don't have a spousal beneficiary. We'll deal with spousal beneficiaries later. Those accounts have a required minimum distribution. And they're calculated the same way as if I had lived. So whether I live or die during the year, in the year that I have a required minimum distribution, it's calculated as if I lived. So the year that I turn, 70 and a half, even if I die before I turn 70 in that same tax year, my accounts have a required minimum distribution. And everything's the same as if I'd lived. So they're going to look at how old would I have attained if I had lived. I would have attained 70 in my example. Some people will actually reach 71 in the same year that they reach 70. Depends on whether your birthday's at the first half or the second half of the year. And then they're going to look at what was the balance as of the end of last year. I have a required minimum distribution. Therefore, the accounts have a required minimum distribution. Now, they'll be taxable to the beneficiary or to my estate, depending upon how I set it up. But the money is supposed to come out in that calendar year. And if I miss it and I'm not, able to postpone it like for the very first one, it's a penalty if I miss it. Or not me, I'm gone. It's a penalty if my heirs miss the required minimum distribution. So yeah, it does have an issue. So if you've got somebody who has an IRA and passes away either early in the year or before they've had a chance to take their required minimum distribution for the year, they still have the required minimum distribution for that year. And it's a paying penalty. We haven't mentioned it yet. The penalty is 50% of what was not taken out that was required. So if I have a required minimum distribution of $10,000 and I miss it, the penalty is $5,000. And the money's still in the IRA and still has to come out taxable. So I'm still going to pay money. I'm still going to pay taxes on the money when it comes out. It's just that it's a very nasty little penalty for missing it. So you really want to get ahead of the game. And by getting ahead of it means you are understanding what your required minimum distributions are. They're not an add-on to the rest of your life. They're part of your income stream when you're that age, so that it's not an additional taxable event that you didn't really need, want, or desire.
Now, in your example, we should be clear, too, that the required minimum distribution you took for the person who passed away is their required minimum distribution. Once that's been satisfied, now the heirs potentially have another required minimum distribution the following year, right?
Right. The heirs, an heir, a non-spouse beneficiary of an IRA, 401k, 457, any of these tax-deferred retirement accounts, specifically through work or traditional IRA, the heirs have a required minimum distribution. And this goes for non-spouse heirs of Roth IRAs as well. Non-spouse heirs, beneficiaries, are required to either start taking a required minimum distribution the year after the year of death. Why the year after the year of death? Because the year of death belongs to the person who died. That's their required minimum distribution. The next year is their beneficiary's required minimum distribution. And whether or not they have to take one that year depends on how old the person was that died. If you want to stretch your payment out over your life expectancy as an heir, you must take it out before December 31st in your first year, which is a year after the year of death. If you want that capability to look at it and stretch it out over a long period of time, or have the flexibility and the option of stretching it out, you can always take more. But if you want to be able to stretch it out, you have to start taking distributions the first year that you're required to take it, and that's the year after the year of death. So if somebody died this year, as a beneficiary, your first required minimum distribution is next year.
Yes.
If they died in 2015, your required minimum distribution is 2016.
We're out of time for this hour. We'll talk more about this next hour. If you have questions on this or anything else, you can talk to Professor Plum off the air at 800-644-1150. That's the number at Lucia Capital Group. Another hour coming up, Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented,
Indiana, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.